We overcome our grief and deep sorrow. Thank you. Thank you, people, for coming to comfort us. Thank you.
Where is he?
Who?
Jesus, why did he come?
I don't know. If he had, Lazarus would not have died.
That's for sure. He's been healing everyone else, and if he had come, Lazarus would be well. Where is he?
What are we going to do?
We're going to cry and we're going to grieve, and for the rest of our lives we're going to visit a tomb on a regular basis.
What are we going to do? What are we going to do if he shows up now?
We're going to cry and grieve with him, and we'll take him to the tomb with us.
Don't you think he can do more than comfort us? Like, you were the one who sat at his feet so in love with his teachings and power.
But this is death. What can he do? What can anyone do?
Well, we can believe.
What am I supposed to believe? That anyone could help us? This is death, and if you think anyone can help us, you're crazy.
Well, you can at least believe something other rather than what we have just seen. Oh, look over there. Jesus is coming. I'm going to see him. I have to see him. Jesus is coming.
Love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, "This illness does not lead to death. Rather, it is for God's glory, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it." Accordingly, though Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, after having heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, the religious leaders were just now trying to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? Those who walk during the day do not stumble, but they see the light of this world. But those who walk at night stumble, because the light is not in them." After saying this, he told them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to awaken him." The disciples said to him, "Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will be all right." Jesus, however, had been speaking about his death, but they thought that he was referring merely to sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. For your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Thomas, who was called the twin, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we might die with him." When Jesus arrived, he found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, some 2 miles away, and many of the congregation had come to Martha and Mary to console them about their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went and met him, while Mary stayed at home. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that God will give you whatever you ask of him." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha said to him, "I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me, even though they die, will live. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" She said to him, "Yes, Lord. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, the one coming into the world." When she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary and told her privately, "The teacher is here and is calling for you." And when she heard it, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet come to the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. The members who were with her in the house, consoling her, saw Mary get up quickly and go out. They followed her because they thought that she was going to the tomb to weep there. When Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she knelt at his feet and said to him, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the members who came with her also weeping, he was greatly disturbed in spirit and deeply moved. He said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Jesus began to weep. So the members who saw this said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Then Jesus, again greatly disturbed, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone was lying against it. Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, "Lord, already there is a stench because he has been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. And Jesus looked upward and said, "Father, I thank you for having heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I have said this for the sake of the crowd standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet bound with strips of cloth and his face wrapped in a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the congregation, therefore, who had come with Mary and had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. You may be seated and invite the children forward. Actually, invite them to head out to Word for Children, out in the comfy chairs. Let's see, today they're hearing the story Deer in the Hollow and also the story of Lazarus. Oh, hi.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, you're just the person I've been looking for.
Oh, excellent. I was hoping I'd get some business today.
Well, yep. I don't have 5 cents, but what I have is a penny. And now, you know, pennies, they're extinct. People don't have pennies anymore. Pennies are worthless, but some of us held on to our pennies because they're the foundation of our currency, and well, for sentimental reasons too, so we could remember how much you could get penny candy wise. But that's all I have to offer. I think there's a metaphor there.
All right. Well, I guess a penny for my thoughts, huh? All right.
Yeah.
All right, so what questions do you have?
Well, see, I've been driving by this place and I've seen the signs out front, and there's one that really spoke to me because it says embracing doubt. And I struggle with doubt. And then This week when I went by, it said, keening for resurrection. Mm-hmm. And now there's one of the things I really struggle over when I struggle with doubt. So I thought I'd just wander into this place. And actually, I'm surprised it's not any grander than it is. You have a little... So the embracing doubt and the keening resurrection are meant to set us up for Easter?
Yeah, well, we're in the season of Lent.
I know.
Okay.
I remember that. Yeah. It's been a long time, but I remember.
Yeah, and so Lent is a time where we journey to the cross, and it seems like a natural time to kind of ask the deep questions about life. Because, you know, how life keeps coming at us, and we just keep living every day, and we fall into these patterns. And so Lent is really a time to step back and take a look. And so this is the fifth Sunday of Lent. Mm-hmm. And so we've been gathering for a while. And the stories are from the Gospel of John. And John's, the whole story... Really, one of his major themes is that Jesus is the light of the world. That there are people who see the light, and there are people who somehow don't see the light. And as Christians, very often we kind of pat ourselves on the back thinking we're the ones that see the light because we believe in Jesus, we come to church, and all this kind of good stuff. But I think there's room when we lose doubt. When we are so sure and certain about what we believe that we stop inquiring and looking for the new things that God might be doing, the ways that God is trying to speak to us, I think it gets in the way. And so that's why we left that sign up there, embracing doubt, because so often doubt is lifted up as the opposite of faith. Yet in my own life, it's the times where those nagging doubts, where my understanding of who God was just didn't seem to match the world and what I knew as truth. And it was at those times where when I dug into that doubt, it actually gave me access to a deeper understanding and in many cases even a new understanding of who God was. And looking back, it's not like I got rid of my old faith, but it just by embracing it,
okay,
it allowed me to go deeper because I was, I was asking questions like you're asking questions.
Well,
did that help?
Yeah, that helps. But now, I remember this story about Lazarus. And
yeah.
I remember that it took Jesus 4 days to get there to perform this miracle. So what was that about? Was he testing the faith of his people? Or was he setting them up? Was this maybe a rehearsal for what was to come? A cave and a body and a stone rolled away? What was this about? What's that all about?
That is a great question. In the story, there's some clues. It tells us that Jesus intentionally delayed. And then when it seems pretty clear that he knew that Lazarus had died. And he said, okay, now we're going to go. And that there's some of these sentences actually are really hard because it almost seems like Jesus was saying, I'm kind of glad Lazarus died because now you're going to be able to believe. What a horrible thing to think what Mary and Martha were going through and all those that loved Lazarus. But the general sense that we get from that story is that Jesus certainly uses as an opportunity for people to be able to see clearly who he was. And I think all of your speculation about it kind of being a foreshadowing, you sound like a writer. So I bet you know about foreshadowing.
Well, a little.
Yeah, but yeah, there is this sense of there's so many elements in the raising of Lazarus that seem to point directly to what's going to happen to Jesus.
Right.
And so rehearsal, foreshadowing, certainly the gospel writer saw it as part of the story and part of why we should not be that surprised that Jesus would rise again, because it was predicted by scriptures, and even if Jesus had the ability to raise someone from the dead, then certainly that was a power that was available to him.
Yeah. Well, then we've got Mary and Martha. I love these two women. Actually, there's so many strong women in the Bible. Martha, when she hears that Jesus is coming, she goes out there immediately, and she's been grieving, and she's been keening and wailing. And she goes out immediately because is she thinking that Jesus is saying that Lazarus really is dead and that he's been resurrected, therefore we should believe in the resurrection? Is the doubt still there? Is that what she's thinking?
Well, I think it's always tough to figure out what they were thinking.
I know, but I like to speculate.
I know you. What seems clear is she was in the depth of her grief about the loss of her brother.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, out of that grief, you almost hear an accusation. I mean, it is an accusation. Mm-hmm. If you had been here.
Where were you?
So even within that, there's this confidence and belief in who Jesus was and how she knew he was of God, and that if he had been here, then something as horrible as this, as the death of her brother, wouldn't have happened. And so, but then what he comes back to her with is basically, you know, having her express her faith. Do you believe in the resurrection?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yes, I do believe, and he will rise again. And so then he takes that and kind of draws out, and in the midst of her grief, she's still able to proclaim that faith. And at that point, she didn't know, I mean, her faith really was in Jesus. How could she conceive of the possibility that he would raise him from the dead? But even so, she spoke her faith, and I think that's the testimony to us that we're constantly confronted with times in our life where it seems like everything is not going right. And very often we start kind of having this transactional conversation with God. It's like, God, I thought the deal was if I lived a good life and did what I was supposed to, that these bad things wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And I suspect that you found that actually isn't how it worked. People that are wonderful, doing the right things, horrible things happen. But I think the assurance is that even in the midst of that, if we will continue to trust and have hope, which is the possibility of a future that's full of life, that God will use that, and that hope may not be displaced.
Hmm.
Now, I wish it meant that whenever, you know, someone was dying, that they wouldn't die. But the reality is death is part of life. But I think the promise of the resurrection is that death is not the last word.
It's tough, though. Is grieving a loved one kind of an indication of a lack of faith?
I think
why does God let people die?
Why does God let people die? The truest answer is God lets people die because God lets people die. I mean, part of our, we're not immortal. We have mortal bodies. But grieving, grieving not just the death of a loved one, but also broken relationships, kind of grieving the loss of a job. I mean, I think when we're grieving, what's happening is there's a future that we just expected that would happen. Like, you know, when you have a job, your future is continue to work. All of a sudden, when you lose that job, that future is gone. When you have a loved one that's been a good partner or a good companion in life, and they're gone, it really is the grieving of the loss of that future. And grief, I think, is a natural and appropriate response to being confronted with a future that is hard, that will be absent someone. And the most faithful people grieve. Jesus wept before he raised Lazarus. I mean, we have an example that, I mean, to expect not to grieve, I think, is unreal, and I think it's even unhealthy. And so there, in those that walk with Jesus, even though they experience the sadness, the anger, the frustration, the despair, all of that, underneath it, there is the ability to have a foundation of trust. And even the ability to have joy at celebrating the privilege it was to have someone in their lives in the midst of that tragedy. So grief is not the opposite of faith.
No, but so It's essential then to our faith to believe in resurrection.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, but a lot of folks, when they think of resurrection, they just think about when our mortal bodies stop, when our life here on earth is done. But resurrection really is about coming back to life. And I think what I know is that Jesus is constantly saying, I am the life now. It's not just about sometime in the future, but I'm the life now. We baptize people. And in a real sense, the primary metaphor of that is drowning and coming back to life. It's always great. Well, I was going to say it's great when the baby cries if we're baptizing. Yeah. It's really powerful because when a baby cries because when they get the water on them, there's like this reaction. It's like, no, this is not what I want. But then the emergence to life then emphasizes how this is symbolic of the death and rebirth. So every time we remember our baptism, there's the opportunity to kind of come back from whatever death we've been living in. It may be despair. It may be giving up hope. It may be resignation. It may just be sleepwalking through life. And there's the opportunity to wake back up to life. So also, very often we gather and we confess our sins. I mean, we're human. We can't help but sin and do things that hurt ourselves and others and don't do what God wants us to do. And when we confess, it really is like taking a shower and washing all that away, knowing that a relationship with God is restored. In essence, the fear of something that we've done cutting us off is gone. And it can pop us back into renewed life and commitment to live in a godly life, to live in love with God and in relationship with others. And so I think that so much of the power of the resurrection is available here and now.
So I have one more question.
Okay.
We celebrate Christmas in a very, well, in a joyful kind of way. Unfortunately, it's become a very materialistic kind of way. And it's a short period of time. Yeah. Now, we celebrate Easter over a very long period of time, through all of this period of Lent. And I saw the calendar of things out there that you're doing in this little church of yours. And you've got something going on every day during Holy Week. So it seems to me that this is at Easter is where our hearts lie. Easter is where our belief is grounded. Again and again at Easter, we reinforce that belief and calm our doubts. Is that fair to say?
I think it's a very insightful thing to say. But you talked about Holy Week, which is actually before Easter.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real power, in just like embracing doubt, kind of going to those dark places where we don't want to go, or in grieving, actually allowing ourselves to experience the loss, actually gives the opportunity to experience the joy and the life. So also, one of the reasons we emphasize Holy Week so much is that to really experience the power and celebration of the resurrection on Easter Day, taking that journey with Jesus as he proceeds each day to the cross is just allows that to become so clear. And of course, as we do that with Jesus, we can't help but do that in our own lives, to grieve the things, to confront the fears that we're up to, but then on Easter to celebrate the resurrection anew. Wow.
Thank you, Pastor.
Well, you're welcome here.
You're a very...
You lied.
Well, I needed to see. I'm a doubter.
I do want to give you a penny for your thoughts.
Okay.
Because you have some wonderful insights. And I hope you come back sometime, and I'd love to continue the conversations.
I will come back. You're a very wise man. I hope you get a bigger church sometime soon.
Oh, well, thank you.
Story about God's people, and it's for the people of God. It comes to us from the 37th chapter of Ezekiel. God grabbed me. God's spirit took me and sent me down in the middle of a vast valley that was strewn with bones. I was led all around and among the bones, and there were so many. They were dry and parched from the sun. And then God said to me, "Mortal, can these bones live?" I said, "Master God, only you know that." Then God said to me, "Prophesy to these bones. Tell them to listen to the message of God. Say this." God says, "Watch me. I'm going to breathe life into you, and you will come to life. I will cause your bones to come together, and I will attach sinews to you, and put meat on your bones, and stretch skin over you. I will breathe the breath of life into you, and you will live." So I prophesied just as the Lord had commanded me, and I heard a noise, or rustling, and the bones moved and came together. And I continued watching. Sinews formed on them, and muscles, and skin stretched over them. But there was no life in them. So God said to me, "Prophesy to the breath. Tell the breath that this is what the Master God says. Come, O breath, come from the four winds. Come and breathe life into these slain bodies. Come, O breath, breathe life." And the breath came and entered them. And they came to life and stood on their feet, a vast army. God said to me, "Do you see these? This is the whole house of Israel. Listen to what they're saying. Our bones are dried up. Our hope is gone. There's nothing left of us." So God said to me, "Therefore go and prophesy to them and tell them that I am the God of life and I will breathe life into them. I will open up their graves and draw them out and they will be my people. Tell them that when I open their graves and breathe life into them and cause them to be my people, they will realize that I am God. I will pick them up and take them to their land, and they will realize that I am God. I've said it, and I'll do it. This is my word." This is a story about the people of God, and it's for the people of God.
Only be still and wait his leisure in cheerful hope without content. To take what is thy Father's pleasure.
The New Testament reading is taken from the 8th chapter of Romans. Paul writes, "To set the mind on the flesh is death, but to set the mind on the Spirit is life and peace. For this reason, the mind that is set on the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law. Indeed, it cannot. And those who are in the flesh cannot please God. But you are not in the flesh. You are in the Spirit, since the Spirit of God dwells in you. Anyone who does not have the Spirit of Christ does not belong to him. But if Christ is in you, though the body is dead because of sin, the Spirit is life because of righteousness. If the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead dwells in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will give life to your mortal bodies also through his Spirit that dwells in you." The word of the Lord.
Lifting our voices and turning toward God, let us pray for the church, the earth, and all who are in need. God, our sure strength, set the mind of your church.